Welcome to Paddling Adventures Radio. I'm Sean Rowley, and with me is Derek Specht.
Hello.
How's it going, Derek?
Fantastic.
Oh, the weather is nice.
It is, and we're in full, what would you call it, mosquito bloom or...
Pre-mosquito season.
The hatch is upon us, and I was doing some work in the yard on the weekend, and I like had to duck because, whoa, there's a cloud above my head, and then looked out the front window, and I could see, well, the heat was coming off the car, so the bugs must like it, so there was a very dense cloud of bugs hovering over the car, and
I haven't seen a bunch of bugs yet.
Oh, no? Oh, no. I haven't seen so many. Like, on the way into work, I work down by the lake, and it's like when you get inside, you have to shake the mosquitoes out of your hair because they just get right into your scalp type thing.
Really?
I'm walking through clouds of them. And my windshield just splattered with, like, thousands of little dead bug bodies.
Oh, you murderer. Mass murderer.
I killed 1,000 of them today.
Wow. Tis the season. Because I'm sitting there thinking I'm on a canoe trip in a couple of weeks there, and are the bugs going to be out?
Oh, yeah.
Right? I got my zebra shirt.
Oh, yeah.
I ordered that zebra shirt. Yeah. It came in, so I got it, and it fits, which is nice.
I'm so
always
curious.
A bonus.
I'm so curious if that's going to work.
Well, it's going to suck if there's no bugs.
Yes.
It worked so well. Nary a bug for 100 kilometers.
So I've been, speaking of trips, so you're talking May 2 for a weekend trip, right? Now...
No, that's the second one.
That's the second one.
Yeah, I'm on one Mother's Day weekend.
Okay. So I know down here, ice is out, the bugs are hatching, and I've been watching, there's somebody in Algonquin that's been doing like every 2 or 3 days a ice out report, and I've been watching this family up on... In Temagami, they've been doing an ice out report. So Temagami, they're averaging like 7 to 21 inches of ice still on their lake.
Yeah.
And Algonquin, it was like it's starting to happen quick in Algonquin. They were at Lake of Two Rivers, and it's pretty much iced out.
Good.
There's patches of it.
Good.
But
I know farther north there, like interior tripping has been delayed.
Yes, so
or at least a week.
So Algonquin Park posted yesterday, I think they said. They said they're not opening yet. They should know within a week, or they'll know before May 1st, they hope. Mm-hmm. But if they have to delay, it'll just be delayed into, like, I think they said the 5th of May. Because they're not going to open up the park if it's too much snow in the backcountry and too much ice on the lakes, right? So they are keeping a close eye on things.
Of course,
we're talking local to us. I don't pay attention to anybody else's snow.
I don't think Florida has anything to worry about.
Yeah, I don't think Florida.
Arizona, New Mexico, Australia, they got nothing to worry about at this point in time.
Yeah.
So,
but out west, I think there's depending on your latitude, it's there's still quite a bit of snow. I'm sure.
You're never going to get in with a bad latitude like that. See what I did there? Yeah, yes, I'm a dad.
It was a very lame attempt.
Shut up. I got my new Rally Crew shirt on tonight.
It's very bright.
Isn't it? Says the guy that comes in dressed like a giant frog. Bright green.
Yeah.
Rallycrew.com. Go check them out. It's all about whitewater, getting together with people, getting tips on different places. To paddle in your area or if you're going to an area, that sort of stuff. We talked about that a little while ago. Rallycrew.com. Go check it out.
Yeah, so we're members. And they're talking about, it's like the more people out there and more people on Rally Crew, it's like those who use it, you're going to log your trips. You're going to share your beta on your location and your trips, and you connect with one another. And so it's to... The more people that are sharing the routes and whatever, it just makes it so much easier for others to, hey, I'm going to do that route. Hey, I'm going to hook up with so-and-so, and we'll do that route as well, right?
Yep.
So, yeah, if you had, did you go on Rally Crew and post your trips? Remember you got iced out on your first trip there and you ended up doing the local creek?
No, because there wasn't whitewater where we were going on the local creek.
Yes, no, but so, you tried to go up north.
Yeah, if we would have went up farther north and we were able to, then. Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, no, that wasn't iced out. That was being told wrong about my roof racks.
Oh, yeah. I forgot about
that. The roof racks. Yes, those roof racks will fit your truck, sir.
Did you?
Those lying you-know-what.
I remember having a conversation about price.
Yeah. Oh. The roof racks, technically the roof racks fit, but the clamps that clamp them on do not fit. And in 2018, they changed those clips. So the new clips don't fit my old feet tower things that attach the bar to the roof.
So can you get just the clips or do you need new feet?
I had to get new feet too.
And how much are the feet?
At the end of the day, with the feet, the clips, and all that extra little bits was almost $600.
And that's just for pieces.
Yeah. But I didn't have to buy the bars. I didn't have to buy that. Sorry, $400. I didn't have to buy the locks because the locks, the little lock cylinders, they come out of the old ones and fit in the new ones.
Nice.
So I ended up saving about $600 at the end of the day. Mm-hmm. So, because like I say, I could use the old roof rack wings and all that. So, son of a gun.
Yeah. It is like they're very useful. Yeah. But it's shocking how much they can charge
for
stuff like that.
Right. Yeah. They know they got you by the old short curlies. Right.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, Rack Attack in Toronto there, I went and talked to Tate and, I said, this is just like an Apple. Yeah. You know, where they force you, you got to buy the new adapter, you got to buy the new, you know, thing. And it goes exactly like that.
Yeah.
You know, you just cannot, and it doesn't make sense. Like I say, these roof racks I've been using are perfectly good, except they changed the roof.
Yeah.
Like how thick it is.
Exactly.
And he says, you think they would make or have some sort of kit.
Exactly. Change out the clamp.
No, they make you. I mean, it's a business too, right?
It is. Yeah, they got to make their money.
But so I sent a message to Thule and said, "Hey, here's the deal. Is there something I can buy?" Rather than having to drive all the way out to Rack Attack, never got a message. 1 to 2 days, they said.
Yeah,
we didn't get anything. So I finally just drove out.
Yeah.
Today, like over a week later, I get an email telling me to do exactly what I did.
Thanks for your
thank you for your prompt customer service. So anyway, whatever. All's good. But had those worked, we would have gone farther up north and did some nice white water stuff coming down. But and it's not big white water, but
it's something.
It's a good spring run, right?
It's exciting.
It's like about a 6-hour spring run down, apparently. So other than that, that's all that's happening.
Yeah. Speaking of water, white water, high water, you've been seeing I don't want to say Northern Ontario, I guess Mid Ontario,
mid to north.
There's a lot of flooding going on right now.
Yeah,
lot.
It's up. It's down even north of Killarney there.
Yeah.
All of a sudden, it's coming down. It's coming, and then all of a sudden, it starts rising again.
Yeah.
It's like, wait a minute.
Dwayne and Marion, that's a Bearskin Lodge. Is that what it's called?
Yeah, yeah. Up north of Killarney.
They're flooded too.
They're totally flooded. They're floating their boats in the parking lot.
Exactly.
We got to take the boats from the edge of the parking lot across the parking lot to the docks. Well, just pull them.
Walk it over.
Just float it on over.
Yeah.
Right? So, that's delays the opening and getting stuff ready and whatnot.
Exactly.
Right? So, but is what it is.
Yeah.
You pays your money, you takes your chances.
Exactly. Yeah. This occasionally once in a long time flooding is becoming a bit more routine.
Mm-hmm.
So, which of course affects, I don't know, just where my brain goes. It's like, man, it's like somebody wants to build a house. It's like, oh no, that area is flooded twice now in the last 3 years. So we're hesitant about allowing building permits now, yada, yada, yada. It's like, oh no.
Well, it depends if you want a basement or not.
Yes.
If you don't need a basement,
build
it on a pad or build it on stilts or
there you go.
You know, that sort of thing. And then you're good to go.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Right?
Build a houseboat.
Build a houseboat.
Yeah.
That's all you need to do. If everything starts flooding, there's a couple levers you pull in your house and poof, these giant pontoons inflate out from underneath your car or underneath your house, right? You're saved.
Exactly. And you just have a flexible attachment point for your power and your water. And
then all your neighbors that are totally pissed at you start coming over in the middle of the night and jamming a knife into your pontoons. Oh, man. Anyway, yeah, looking forward to getting out on the water, getting out anywhere right now. And just like, between work and home and not enough time outdoors.
Yes.
I've just had enough. I've just had enough. I don't know who needs to hear it, but I've just had enough.
Yeah, and it seems to only really rain on the weekends. That's a bummer.
Well, today, however, I mean, we're just rambling now, but you started it. You know how you go to work in the dark?
Yep.
And then you go in your building, it's light all day, and then when you're leaving, it's dark again.
Now, it's not that way.
Yeah, but this morning, it was a beautiful drive-in, then it rained all day.
So you're having to
be
inside.
I had no clue because I went out to shipping and it was pouring rain. When'd that start? About 10 minutes after you got in? Really?
Yeah.
And then, I'm going to drive home in the rain. I walked outside to go to my truck, dry. And then apparently it just finished raining.
Oh, yeah?
It's like,
nice.
That's awesome. That is awesome. And then you, like you say, you know it's going to rain all weekend now.
Yes, yeah, exactly. Right?
It's going to rain all day, but it was beautiful in the morning and this evening.
Yeah.
All right, what do we got to talk about this week?
What do we have to talk about?
You got anything interesting?
Just the bug thing.
Hey, you know what I was thinking?
Mm-hmm.
I saw a bunch of people doing the stand-up paddleboarding thing with surfing and stand-up paddleboard surfing and that sort of stuff. And they're calling it in Hawaii, I think it was. Australia. Hawaii. Great Whites. Ooh. So they're closing some of the places because they're taking drone shots of these people doing this.
Oh!
And there's
sharks nearby. I've seen a few of those shots.
How do you know? Because they're saying, you know, the attacks are very rare.
Yeah.
So how do you know the sharks aren't just there playing? Because the dolphins do it. Whales do it. Why wouldn't a shark do it?
Exactly.
Right?
So out of every 100 sharks, one of them attacks.
Right? Because he's that old grumpy shark telling everybody to get off his lawn.
Half his teeth are missing.
Get off my lawn! Could you imagine that? I would be so tempted if there was a shark surfing right next to me to put my foot on him. Have 1 foot on the board and 1 foot on a shark.
Yeah, I don't know if I'd be.
It may be the last thing I ever do, but at least I could say I did it.
Yeah.
How'd he die? You don't want to know. It was something stupid, wasn't it? Yes.
The shark was very grumpy. He didn't like
me
stepping on him.
That 100th shark.
I tried to surf a shark.
Right? Legend or idiot? Your choice. let's talk rafting.
Yes.
It sounds like a good gig, right?
nice transition.
You like that? Well, there's water involved. You can't raft a shark.
No, you
can't. Unless you tie a bunch of them together.
Yeah, yeah. Stack them and cross-thatched.
Oh, yeah. Outdoor Magazine. You read it.
I do.
There's this Corey Buhe did an article.
Article and an interview.
And an interview. I thought it was pretty cool.
And enlightening. Cool.
Very enlightening.
It's like, whoa. It's like it's to get the inside track on some insider information on some industries or some program. It's like, oh.
Because this is one of those jobs you always thought of. Like if you were right into rafting and stuff like that, that'd be a cool job to have.
But then
just like ski instructors.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, I'm moving to Colorado and I'm going to be a ski instructor. That'll be awesome. Yeah.
Can't afford to live there.
So he met up with this woman who is a rafting guide and had a little chit chat with her. He says, working in the rafting industry is all consuming gig. It's your working hours, your off days, it's your source of confidence, it's your community, it's your Friday potluck, your Wednesday poker night, your Thursday happy hour. During the month you spend in the boathouse, your job and your team are your everything. Lifestyle gives a lot, but it takes a lot too. None of the guides we spoke to for this story can afford traditional housing during the season. Some live out of their personal vehicles or in a series of broken down buses provided as employee housing. Some live in sheds or tents. In big rafting towns, local churches sometimes put on dinners for the guides, both to show their support for their local economy and to throw a bone to the youngsters they know aren't making enough to feed themselves. The work isn't easy either. Whitewater is serious business, and injuries are surprisingly common. Sometimes it's an elderly client who slumps into a heart attack mid-rapid. Sometimes it's a twisted knee or an ankle that gets wedged in the boat during a flip. One guide spoke to us from bed. She's out of commission with a partially torn biceps tendon, an injury she suffered after a client grabbed her arm in a panic during a fall and dislocated her shoulder. Ow. It's not the first injury she's had on the job, and it likely won't be the last, but she doesn't plan on letting that stop her. Because for many longtime guides, rafting truly is a dream job. It unlocks access to wild places, unreachable by foot or by car. It lets you work with your hands, coiling rope, mending boats, and building an experience that most clients will never have again. It puts you face to face with a diverse slice of humanity, delivers conversations and perspectives you'd never have gotten otherwise. Rafting also gives you the chance to build an intimate familiarity with the river itself. The end of the season, some guides report knowing the currents and eddies better than the sun-worn lines of their hands. One veteran guide shares the path she took to get there and how to make guiding work for the long haul. I remember I used to be into rock climbing, and I always thought, oh man, to be able, because you watch these videos back in the VHS tapes.
Oh yeah.
Back in the day, I've still got a bunch of these VHS tapes with all the rock climbing stuff down in the south and stuff like that. And you're thinking, to be able just to buy a truck or a car, live out of your vehicle all summer and just climb all the time life. And teach people and stuff like that would be so cool. And now, years later, you're thinking, part of you is going, that would have been so cool to do. And part of you is going, whew, dodged a bullet there.
Because none of these gigs really make a lot of money. You do it for the passion, not because you're going to make a big paycheck. Mm-hmm. So a climbing guide, a rafting guide, a whitewater training and whatever, you're not getting rich off it. You're doing it because you love it. It's for the passion.
I wouldn't think it's a job you're going to do from 20 to 65.
No. Right? Eventually you're going to have to transition in when your body starts to break down, when you're in your, I don't know what age, but so this woman.
40s or so.
Yeah. So it's like, I really need to start working on saving some money, getting RSPs, and I need to transition into something that I can sock some money away, and instead of just playing all summer. And
yeah, because this isn't going to cut it when you're retired and trying to find a place to live. You got nothing.
Exactly.
Right?
Can't live in a bus till you're 65 or 70.
Well, you could. Well, you could. Depending on where you are, but
it's a hard life.
You know what? It really would be. So the gig at a glance, the job, raft guide. Age, mid-30s. Years in the business, 10. So it's mid-20s that she started. Salary, $17 per hour U.S.
It's
not a high-paying job.
No.
And depends also on how you get paid, which you'll hear about. So he says, how much do you have to work to make ends meet? Guides are paid per trip. So a lot of people work as much as they possibly can. There used to be no limits on that. I had a friend who once worked 83 days straight.
Oof.
These days you get paid by the hour and there are more regulations. Rookies start off at $15. Most they can work in a day is three-hour trips. So 9 hours. I get paid 17 per hour, 17 to 18 per hour. If I'm a medic on the trip. So 17
extra,
regular
or extra dollar an hour if they're the medic.
Mm-hmm. That comes out to $600 to $700 per week during the guiding season, which isn't bad, especially if housing is covered. Most people have to have a different gig in the off season, though. Ski industry jobs are pretty common. I'm going to move to Colorado.
So the whitewater rafting in the summer, ski bum in the winter.
And, right?
Yeah.
Can you afford rent? In the Colorado mountain town where I work, paying for housing on a guide's salary is out of the question. One of my former employers took our housing fees out of our paychecks, which meant I sometimes didn't see a cent, even after weeks of work. Another former employer provided no housing at all. We had to camp on public lands without access to running water or bathrooms. Our camp smelled like a litter box. I know another company that rents out double-wide trailers, puts four people in it for $300 per person per month. Other guys live in hammocks in sheds out back or sleep in their cars. Fortunately, the company I work for right now provides housing. It's not much, but it's free. Does housing make or break a rafting gig? It can. I always recommend prospective guides look into the living situation before they take the job. If you've had a rough day on the river, you want to take a hot shower, especially if you're a woman. It's more acceptable for dudes to look and smell like crap. Hey.
I take offense to that.
Or to air out shirtless on the river. But you won't catch me rafting in a sports bra. As a woman, you're more likely to get good tips if you brush your hair and teeth. That's the unfortunate truth.
Keep stuff clean.
Yep. Is sexism an issue? The first company I worked for, it was all, how many pull-ups can you do after you chug a beer? How much whiskey can you consume? I didn't like that. People assumed my boating ability was tied to my ability to consume alcohol.
Yeah.
These days, though, things are changing. I was in a bathroom at another guiding outfit the other day. I saw a QR code on the sticker by the toilet. It linked to an anonymous form for women to safely support sexual harassment. That wasn't an option when I was a rookie. Back then, you had to sack up and talk to someone in person, or you had to deal with it on your own. Are there other things you have to watch out for as a woman in rafting? It is harder to be a smaller person. A lot of the guys I work with are above 6 feet tall, big enough to throw the boat around. I'm 5'4", so I have to rely on my crew a lot more. When you fall out of a raft, it's harder to get back in if your arms are shorter and you have less upper body strength. If you have to be really diligent about your technique, or you'll struggle. I've had to pick up a lot of tricks, and I try to pass those on to the younger women. How bad was your rookie season? I was paid $35 per trip, but I was only guaranteed 2 trips per week.
Oof.
$70 a week.
Mm.
Which was exactly enough to cover my housing. All the other work I did, loading boats, cleaning boats, riding along on trips to shadow other guides, was unpaid.
So that's her rookie season, 10 years in the industry. That would have been 2015, 2016.
Yep.
And that's how little she made in 2015, 2016.
10 years ago, yep.
Boof.
Anytime a trip came up, it was given to the guides with more experience and more miles. The only money I took home that season was from tips. So I rode my bike a lot and tried to make ends meet, but it wasn't enough to live on. What should new guides look for in an employer? Look for a company that has older guides. People who stick around and share their knowledge.
There you go.
Some also provide continuing education, like flip drills, knot practice, and lessons about the local flora and fauna. Housing is another big one, as is the provision of proper safety equipment, like radios and AEDs. All these things demonstrate that a company cares about its people and is willing to invest in them.
True.
100%. Guides have a reputation for partying hard. Are the rumors true? And you know what? I got to say, watching all the skiing movies and stuff from the 80s and 90s, 100%.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
However, that's movies.
Yes.
We like to have a good time, and it's definitely a way to decompress after a hard day. There's also a huge social aspect to rafting. Emergencies happen on a river. We have to help each other out. Community bonding is a big part of that. You see people at social events. You learn their backgrounds. And then when you see them on the river, you know whether they're a wilderness first responder or an experienced guide, or if they're a rookie and could use some support. You learn who you can rely on and who you should check up on. And social outlets are crucial for that.
Yeah, there you go.
I think she kind of dodged that question. And
she got around it.
Got around the parking hard part.
Yeah. It's like, oh, yeah, we it's good to socialize because you get to kind of measure the people you're working with. And you'll know them on the water, but you got to know them while socializing. And it's like, that's not what we asked.
What keeps you doing this work? I love rafting with families because that's how I first started rafting, going down the river with my family when I was a little girl. One of the things I like to say to my guests is that we're each other's captive audience for the next 2 hours. We're going to find similarities between us and we're going to get to know each other. I get to meet people I would never have spent an afternoon with otherwise. The other amazing thing is that these people are on vacation and this could be their best day ever. I'm so fortunate that I get to be a facilitator for that. I'm creating experiences that people, for people that could stick with them for the rest of their lives.
Cool.
Gives you a little bit of an insight to being a guide and a woman guide as well.
Because the only perspective we have is actually going on vacation.
Right.
And getting to know these people
for
a couple hours. And it's like, that's, you know, so it kind of gives you an idea of what's, you know, what's behind the
well,
curtain.
When we went to Japan and did that log raft.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, we chit-chatted with the guys and whatnot for all the few hours we were out there. But then after that. That's all you know. You knew what was happening there and what you could see happen, but you don't know the ins and outs of what happens before the trip, after the trip.
Yeah.
And all the other, you know, they're not telling you about that big, massive crash they had. You know, that sort of thing. But no, it's like I say, growing up way back when I was first starting into the outdoors, it was like, that'd be cool to have that as a job.
Mm-hmm.
And then afterwards, you're thinking, yeah, well, you know what, like that. I don't think I could make enough to live on that and be in a position where I want to be in 20 years. So, yeah, I'm not going to do that.
Mm-hmm.
And then you find out, yeah, that's exactly what would have happened. Yeah. Right. So, but there's other people that just thrive and thoroughly enjoy it because, I mean, just because you're down doing the river trips with the guests.
Yeah.
Nothing saying you can't go out on your own as well. Not necessarily in a raft, in a kayak.
Yeah.
You know, there's all the other social stuff to do, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. So that's cool. That's cool. Good article. Yeah. Outside Magazine.
Yeah, it was a good article. It was very interesting. Yeah. I learned stuff.
And you have a subscription to that.
I do.
Yeah.
Yeah. The online version. I don't get the paper copy.
Save some trees.
Exactly.
We're talking about the price of gasoline, and I know my truck is flashing right now. You are below 30 kilometers, or sorry, 20 kilometers.
To empty?
Left, to empty. It's 24 to work. Son of a...
So you have to get gas in the morning.
Yeah, I have to get gas in the morning. Because when I get off the road, off the highway coming home...
Hmm.
I can so because it comes down a few cents in the evenings, but there's so many people.
Oh,
it's just like I do not have the patience to wait for this. Right, I will pay the extra few cents.
Yeah.
But what I do now is I set $150, no more, no less. That's what goes into my tank every couple of weeks.
Okay,
and
every couple of weeks, so your tank lasts that long, eh?
Oh, well, if I'm going to work and back and stuff, you know what? So I had a Ford Ranger. And I was putting $70 a week. That was in beginning of 2013.
Mm-hmm.
I was putting $70 a week into my Ford Ranger.
Yeah.
And I was getting week and a half out of it.
Yeah.
Right? And my big thing about going to the big F-150 was, ooh, man, the gas is just going to be absolutely brutal. I am getting pretty much the same gas mileage.
Oh, yeah.
Out of the bigger truck.
Modern engine.
Sorry. No, I would get a week out of the Ranger. Now I get almost 2 weeks with a double size of tank.
Yeah.
So my tank's twice as big.
So, yeah.
So it takes twice as much gas, but I'm going twice the distance. Higher.
It still matches.
Yeah. So mm-hmm. Realistically, the only thing that has changed is the price of gas.
Yeah.
Right? So now that $70, which should have cost me $140, is now costing me $180.
Yeah.
Right? But I cap it at $150.
Mm-hmm.
And then if the price comes down, like all of a sudden you had that big dip a couple of weeks ago.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Let's just fill this bad boy. So, yeah. So we talk about that. That's where I was going with that.
When you go on vacation,
yeah,
I get a lot of extra miles out of my gas tank.
So I can travel from Ajax pulling a trailer with two canoes on it,
mm-hmm.
loaded with gear, two kids and a dog, me and the wife, drive from Ajax north of Sault Ste. Marie on one tank of gas.
Mm. Easy riding miles on the highway.
Just get on the highway, yep. Click cruise control on, and bzzz, you just get in your lane and just, you're not in a hurry, you're not weaving, you're not speeding up and slowing down. Nice, easy drive up, and yeah, all the way up towards Pancake Bay on one tank of gas.
Yeah. Hmm.
Which is really good.
When I don't have to drive here to record, I normally get about 2 weeks out of a tank of gas with the driving that I do.
Mm-hmm.
And when you're away somewheres and I don't drive here, I'm usually getting about 4 weeks.
See?
It extends my trip.
Gotta like that. Gotta like that. So, price of gas is going up everywhere. Fishermen in eastern Samar, in the Philippines, are abandoning motorized boats, returning to traditional paddling methods as soaring fuel prices make daily fishing trips increasingly unaffordable, highlighting the deepening impact on rising oil costs and coastal communities. Island village of Apatan in San Policarpo, several fisher folk have opted to leave their engines behind, instead using handmade wooden paddles fashioned from driftwood to reach fishing grounds. This shift comes as gasoline prices have climbed from around P65, they have the Filipino peso, P65, which is $1.45 Canadian, as high as 110, which is 250 Canadian, per liter in recent weeks. So we're at like 170.
Yeah, we've been hovering about 170.
Yeah, I saw it tonight, 178
mm-hmm.
Canadian per liter, and they're at 250.
Yeah, we're doing good.
One fisherman said a typical fishing trip requires at least 2 liters of fuel, an expense now beyond the reach of many in their community. And of course, we're sitting there, 2 liters. You got to remember, their money and industry and all that is a lot different than ours.
And right? The cost of living is also way different. So
yeah.
when you're only making minimal just to live on, and when the price of a liter of gas is like, do I put food on the table or do I buy gas? It's like, it makes a big difference when in those types of economies.
I remember going to Mexico when I was in college and, oh, you have to barter with the taxi drivers. They want 5,000 to drive you somewhere, 5,000 pesos. No, talk them down to 3,000 pesos. And at the end of the day, you're thinking, it's 50 cents. Just give the dude the 50 cents.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know, I'm a college student, but I can afford 50 cents.
Yeah.
It's exhausting, especially when the waves are strong, but we have no choice, they said, describing the physically demanding return to manual paddling. Situation underscores how rising fuel costs are forcing small-scale fishers to revert to older, labor-intensive methods just to sustain their livelihood, significantly reducing both their range and potential catch. Exactly it. Whereas in a boat motor, you can boogie for 20 kilometers. Paddling,
you're
not going 20 kilometers. Similar challenges are being faced inland in the municipality of Hipapod, where operators of small river boats, locally known as boat, are also grappling with steep increases in diesel prices to as high as P150 or $3.35 Canadian per liter.
That's a lot per liter.
That's a lot. boat owner Erwin Pajares, who plies the route from Baranagay Kagmanaba.
Do that again. Say it again.
Baranagay Kagmanaba. Right? said a round trip consumes about 2 liters of diesel. Operators have raised fares to cope, but he admitted the increase is small, not enough to offset operating costs. Kagmanaba serves as a vital riverside access point to jump-off areas to Senizi Falls, an emerging tourist destination, making transport services crucial for both residents and visitors. Aside from fuel costs, boat operators are also contending with low water levels, limiting the number of passengers and cargo they can carry. Boats that previously accommodated up to 12 passengers are now restricted to 5 to 10 to avoid running aground.
Huh.
When fuel was still affordable, even a few passengers were enough to sustain operations. Despite mounting expenses, operators remain hesitant to impose further fare increases, noting that passengers are also struggling with rising living costs.
Yeah, it's I don't think a lot of people really appreciate the effects on like industry and and everything with the price of fuel. Like even people, and I'm starting to see notes about it with people traveling. And I know I'm going to have to potentially expect to pay extra, but even after you've paid for your, for example, I'm flying out west in July, and I'm supposed to be expecting a extra fuel surcharge, regardless of the fact I've already paid for a flight. I have to pay extra when I check in, most likely.
Well, and there's a lot of airlines are shutting some flights down because running out of fuel.
Exactly. Well, it's the fact that, well, the JFK in New York, Air Canada, no, WestJet, one of them said that they're not going to fly into that airport because it's notoriously expensive for fuel there. So they aren't going to go there. They just go to LaGuardia and so on.
Mm-hmm.
And then other places like, oh, you know what? We have to shrink. So we would normally fly to 100 different airports, for example, and now we're only going to fly to 60 because we have to reduce the number of flights, and we're going to try and pack the flights instead of traveling three quarters full. We're only going to fly full flights type thing. And so it's tight when like the jet fuel has doubled in price from what they're saying. Mm-hmm. And so that's a huge expense. If your budget is whatever, and now you have to double that, whatever,
Well, like they say, I mean, 1 minute you're paying $1.50, next minute you're paying $3.50.
Yeah. And jet fuel is more expensive than the average gas and diesel. It's processed and it costs more. So yeah, it's tough.
Yeah, once something happens with the fuel supply,
It's
felt global.
Exactly.
So yeah, these people are getting back to the old paddling method now. So, you know what? Hey, it's your exercise.
Well,
it'll make you feel better.
It's the exercise, but it's like, so they're not burning fuel, but now they're just going to have to eat more food. Right? So it's going to cost them no matter what.
Yeah. Conflicts to canoes, the benefit of paddling. So Paddle UK had a website, had a story that I found interesting. Former BBC news producer Dominic Hurst covered conflict and unrest in the world's most dangerous places. Life is now much calmer and safer, overseeing the growth of a canoe club he founded, and he tells his story in this article. Because we're always talking about how paddling can reduce stress. And if things are so hectic, get out in the boat for a while. Go down a river, out in a, you know, go for a good paddle and de-stress, that sort of thing, right? So, gunfire ripped through a dark African night. Minutes later came the whine and boom of incoming shelling. We sheltered behind sandbags in the remote air base of southern Somalia, but we continued to film and record the attack for BBC News. When morning came, African Union peacekeeping troops carrying automatic weapons clambered into armored vehicles. We joined them, cameras ready. They headed out into the desert to hunt down the militants who had attacked the base. After a couple weeks of relentless, exhausting, dangerous work, I was back home. Spending time with family and friends was the best way to decompress after a challenging trip. The other way was to get in my kayak and go paddling. Kayaking was a wonderful release from the pressures of being a television news producer. For 3 decades, my job took me across the globe, organizing and fixing coverage of news stories. It was exciting, exhausting, and relentless. I traveled to Iraq, Afghanistan, Democratic Republic of the Congo, Guatemala, Indonesia, and many other places, often where conflict, unrest, and natural disasters were happening. In between assignments, being on the river or the sea with friends from Marlow Canoe Club was an escape from the demands of the job and constant travel.
So this is, Marlow is the canoe club is the one he founded, mm-hmm. I guess.
I joined whitewater trips along the Trewerin, the Dart, and Usk, and other rivers. On the sea, I paddled the Jurassic Coast, navigating tide races. It was fun and exciting and a great way to forget about the job for a while, which is exactly what we say.
Oh, yeah.
I started the show by saying this. I've had enough. I want to just go out and go for a paddle, get out in the nature, just forget about it all. Don't deal with the traffic. Don't deal with people at work. Don't deal with the phone calls and the machines breaking down and having to call up clients and go, well, you know, that job we said you could have today, you're not getting it.
Or having to deal with those difficult coworkers and difficult other people, and it's like,
yeah, my company has a you can't slap your coworker policy.
I think everybody
I've asked.
I think everybody has that policy.
Son of a gun. I gotta find a place that doesn't. They say it's fun and exciting, to a great way to forget about the job for a while. When not working or busy with family, my other way to unwind was to volunteer occasionally. Saturday mornings would sometimes find me waist deep in a ditch, helping the water flow into York Stream, a derelict side channel of the River Thames in my hometown of Maidenhead, Berkshire. March 2020, York Stream was finally restored by the charity Friends of Maidenhead Waterways, working with the local council. Instead of drying up in hot summers, now the water flowed all year round. The new waterside environment helped kickstart the town's regeneration with new development along the banks. But the COVID lockdowns meant this newly restored river remained empty with no paddlers or boats. Lower down on Bray Cut, the channel linking Maidenhead to the Thames, trees fell and blocked the waterway. Charity's long-held dream of starting a new canoe club was on hold. Then things changed. Volunteers had been making progress, clearing trees, fallen trees lower down. Last spring, the council removed the trees blocking its own section on the river on Bray Cut. At last, there was an opportunity to combine my two interests, kayaking and volunteering to restore the waterway. After 30 years, I decided to leave the BBC, so finally had time. 30 years of covering war, unrest.
Yeah, he was a traveling...
All over the place.
He was a traveling journalist. He was a war reporter.
And then now, I became a trustee of Maidenhead Waterways, trained as a paddle sport instructor, founded Maidenhead Canoe Club. Setting up and running a new canoe club is an exciting challenge. A lot safer than reporting from Somalia.
Yeah, no joke.
The club is expanding fast with lots of new members wanting to join. One of my aims is to share my love of paddling with others. As well as coaching our new joiners at Maidenhead Canoe Club, we are offering taster sessions to local charities so other people who may never have tried paddling before can experience the joy of being on the water and feeling closer to nature. 30 years doing that.
I know. And so if you... unfortunately, it's the way our world is today.
Mm-hmm.
We do lose quite a few journalists every year in some of these locations. And we know in some locations they are specifically targeted because because certain locations don't want the word getting out about what they're doing, what atrocities they're. And so I've seen a lot of articles and stories lately of journalists who don't make it out of these areas. So for him to do 30 years, that's amazing.
Right.
And now he's found the time to retire, enjoy the water, and give back. And he's volunteering. He's enjoying his latter years paddling, kayaking, and so on.
Yep. And like you said, in those 30 years between the trips, being out on the water was a real stress reliever for...
Can you imagine? That's so... That's key when you have a high-stress job that affects you mentally and physically, to be able to unleash and let that tension
you
go.
You got to have something.
Get out there on if whatever it is, what people find. But I really find it's very relaxing, and I do get my mind off things when I do canoe and kayak and so on.
Mm-hmm.
It's I find it mentally rewarding to be able to release that pressure, that tension. So,
well, like I say, I'm at the point now I need to go for a good paddle.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Good article again. I'm glad to see he's
enjoying his
retirement. And
not that he didn't enjoy his job. It's it was high stress, high pressure.
Yeah. And as he says, it's a lot better than
getting shot at
in Somalia. Some of the guys I follow from Japan canoeing were out in some big waves on one of the lakes, surfing the waves and stuff. Okay. Like that. Remember when we did our Five Great Lakes in a Day?
Yep.
And we're up on
that was rough.
Michigan?
Yeah. Yeah.
That basically, was bear, it was like that.
It was Bear Dunes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And Stephen Bear Dunes, yeah. And we're out there. They're on big waves like that. Mm. And they're just like surfing the waves, playing in the waves. And I'm thinking about Ajax Rotary Park here.
Oh.
I've seen waves like that out there. And I'm wondering, because I've also seen people, you know, soloing canoes in white water and stuff. That'd be a good place to go play in the waves, is right down there. Because it's deep and then it gets shallow pretty quick, right? So you got the big waves there. And if you go over, it's not so deep that, you know, like you're out in the middle of a big lake.
Yeah.
You're close enough to shore that if things go, you know, you have issues. Everything pushes in to go up the creek, sort of thing, to the mouth of the creek, and you can stand. Well, I've walked out in my dry suit to test my dry suit. Okay. I walked right out in Lake Ontario, right from there, and gave it a test. So you can go out for quite a ways where those waves are pretty big.
Yeah.
So I'm thinking about doing that this summer.
There you go.
Get out there and start playing in some of the big waves.
Yeah. People watch you crash into the sand and roll around and trying to get it back in your kayak. And
my foot! I don't know. I was with some guy in a canoe and a foot.
What is that guy doing out there?
Yeah. That doesn't look fun. These extreme people, just I don't get it.
He spends more time upside down than upside right.
Trying to roll a canoe. Yeah, I got a 90-pound Novacraft SB3 trying to roll this bad boy. Don't think it's going to work.
No.
Not with an attitude like that. Hey, have you ever washed your gear?
I
You don't.
No, I do. And it's tough finding the right stuff. Like last year, I can't remember what I bought, but it was it's like a milky stuff. I washed my tents and then resealed them.
I never wash them.
So the rain does that. I want to say I wash them. I hose them down with a garden hose and then let them dry. And then I sprayed on this something to go, or I can't remember what it was called, but it was, it resealed them. Because remember I complained about, on our trip, the bug tent, and it was leaking. It was starting to drip on our heads. So I resealed that. So it is, I do try and maintain stuff, but, you know, I often abuse a lot of gear until it's...
I used to, and they all say warm water with a mild detergent.
Yeah, I
don't use harsh chemicals.
What is a mild detergent these days?
Like I don't know.
Dawn dish soap? I don't know.
Yeah. Well, if it's good enough to wash the soap off of ducks and penguins, or the oil.
Well, and that's what I'm thinking.
Right? So yeah. I'll get some warm water and some dish soap and usually try to clean up. When they're new, but I don't even remember the last time I cleaned my life jacket. I remember that fish stain, and I know where that Lake Acton dirt came from.
So I've got a tent that I do have to figure out what to do with, because the last time I used it, it was in a campground, and there was a caterpillar. Remember the Egyptian moth caterpillar?
Yeah. They were everywhere and squishy.
So I still have welts and scars on my skin from that. And I'm thinking, if I use that tent again, I'm going to have another outbreak.
Mm-hmm.
Because all those caterpillars and all those little hairs on the caterpillars is all over that tent.
So set the tent up.
I'm going to have to do something.
Burn it.
Well, I have seriously considered that, because...
Is it all wrapped up in the bag right now?
It's all packed away.
Okay, you got a garbage can?
Yeah.
Just dump it in. Call it a day.
Well, I have thought about just putting it out in the rain and leaving it.
Just put for free.
For free.
And then somebody who's all covered in welts is going to drop it right back on your on your doorstep. Anyway, stream to see. Stream, the number 2, and CSEA, has launched a new water sport gear wash. Concentrated no-rinse formula designed to clean wetsuits, buoyancy compensator devices, regulator fins, swimwear, and other sport equipment. Built for divers and water sport enthusiasts, formula helps remove salt, chlorine, sweat, sunscreen residue, odor-causing buildup, while remaining gentle on material such as neoprene, latex, and technical fabrics, according to the company. After time in the ocean, lake, or pool, gear absorbs residues that, if left untreated, can contribute to material breakdown, metal corrosion, persistent odors, shortening the lifespan of gear that often represents a significant investment, like a dry suit, for instance. Conventional cleaners may be too harsh for delicate materials and can introduce chemicals harmful to coral reefs and marine life.
True.
Stream to Sea's Gear Wash was formulated with a plant-based surfactant. I don't think I've ever seen that word before.
I have.
Surfactant system derived from glycolipids that effectively removes strong odors, salt, chlorine, and bacteria without the synthetic chemicals that can harm aquatic environments. Mm-hmm. Gear wash is formulated without ingredients identified as harmful to aquatic ecosystems and reflects the brand's commitment to creating products with consideration for the world's waterways. According to Autumn Bloom, formulator and Stream to Sea CEO, divers and water sports athletes work hard for their gear and their gear works hard for them. We built this gear wash to take care of both, cleaning thoroughly and eliminating even the toughest odor and buildup while remaining mindful that what we use in and around the water flows into our environment. While Stream to Sea developed the gear wash with scuba diving community in mind, the formula is equally suited for swimwear, surf gear, paddling equipment, and any water sport apparel subjected to salt or chlorine exposure. Retails for about $9.95 US for a two fluid ounces, 60 ml bottle. Available at streamtosea.com. But I mean, yeah, I mean, if you can use that for your life jacket, your dry, because there's times where I'll get home after a paddle trip in the shoulder seasons or winter, whatever, and I've got like mud and dirt. And
I wonder if it'll move caterpillar hairs.
I don't know about the hairs. You need a pressure washer for that?
Because honestly, those caterpillar hairs, it's just like poison ivy. Little tiny slivers of poison ivy.
I say get naked. Get into the tent, roll around, collect them all, take one for the team.
Yeah.
If you need something to clean your life jacket, your wetsuit, your dry suit, and all that sort of stuff, Stream to Sea. Get their water sport gear wash. Give that one a whirl. Something different.
Mm-hmm.
And like I say, it's not the soaps and stuff with the chemicals and whatnot that's going to go back into the ecosystems. I mean, we don't have the big coral reefs and stuff here to worry about. But
no, but we do have other issues here that we mm-hmm. want to protect the environment.
We have other issues.
Yeah.
You have no idea. So yeah, definitely need to protect the environment, yeah. stuff like that. So if you're looking for something a bit different, give that one a whirl. Maybe it'll start you actually washing your gear. Or not.
Or not.
I will.
Definitely want to try it on my tent.
Now, I mean, my boats I wash. My tent, yep. I don't usually wash. When I notice it's starting to, if there's a leak or something, then yeah, I give it a wash and then I reseal it. You get the spray resealer and stuff like that. Shoes and stuff I will wash, but it's usually like warm water and Dawn yeah. dish mm-hmm. soap, that sort of stuff. My dry suit, I do that. I'll wherever it's, and it's usually spot wash. I'm not going to wash my entire dry suit. And I don't tend to sweat in it. If I am sweating, it's within the clothes yeah, the I'm clothes wearing underneath. Right?
Exactly.
But it's usually like waist down, like feet, knees, all that sort of stuff that I end up having a spot wash and then I hang it in the dry, yeah. in the laundry room. People walk by thinking there's someone hanging there. Scares me a couple of times. Whoa, there's a body hanging in my laundry room. That's what happens if you tick me off. Don't take him off. You'll end up in his laundry room with the other guy. So, yeah, there's certain things I wash, certain things I'm just like, I can't be bothered.
My life jacket, I have never actually washed it, but I do swim with it once in a while. I figure that should be enough.
That's a good rinse off.
Yeah.
No, when it's new, there comes a point, and I'm not really sure where that point is, that I don't treat my gear like it's new anymore.
Mm. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Like when I first bought my Kokatat life jacket, is like, ooh, well, just give that a quick little rinse, give that a little wash off, grab a wet cloth and wipe that off.
Mm.
And then eventually it's like, I had a nap, I use it as a pillow, the back's yeah, yeah, yeah. all dirty and stained. whatever.
Yeah.
Right? I don't know when that happens. Yeah. I'm sure it happens with everybody. There comes a point where, yeah, I've had that a couple of years now or whatever. It's dirty.
Got some pine sap on it. I'll just squish it into the dirt on the ground so nothing sticks to it anymore.
That is the worst.
Just add some dirt to the pine sap. It's all good.
Yes. Yeah, it doesn't. You can't put pine sap and dirt, rub it together, and then the pine sap comes off.
No.
That does not happen that way.
You're just making it not sticky.
Right? Stupid pine trees. There's sap.
Yeah.
Speaking of paddles,
because
we were earlier, bending branches.
Yes.
Good paddles?
I've looked at them for years. I just don't feel I can afford them.
So I had the conversation with the conversation with Cliff Jacobson.
Oh, yes.
About carbon fiber versus wood.
Yes.
I prefer the heavier wood paddles.
It's got a nice feel.
And he says
it.
It's because you don't know better.
But no, I like the warmth of wood. Like a carbon fiber it's cold plastic.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
They're lightweight. They have their spots.
Sure.
You know, when you're 900 years old like Cliff is, then maybe.
I'm always worried about jamming a carbon fiber paddle between rocks as I'm paddling along and cracking it. It's like, oh, no.
Well, when I look at these carbon fiber paddles and stuff like these lightweight, when you're looking at $500 for a paddle.
Yeah. So there's that.
It's like golf. I know there's guys in my industry and they play golf and they go, we're going to this golf course. It's about $300 for a round.
No, thank you.
I don't play $300 golf.
No,
I play $20 golf. I don't play $500 paddle.
I play $50 golf where you get a cart and a steak dinner.
Right? Yeah. I have a hard time. I'm not cheap, but I'm not going to buy
exactly.
the really expensive stuff just for the sake of having that.
Yeah.
And
I can't appreciate something that high quality.
Yeah. Yeah. As much as I like the $5,000 canoe,
mm-hmm.
I don't, all my canoes don't need to be $5,000.
No. Well, all canoes are $5,000 nowadays, though. But still, it's one of those things. Like, a canoe is a tool. And if you're planning on getting 10 plus, 15 plus years out of
Our canoe's 10 years old now, by the way. I bought it 10 years ago last week.
So if with anything like that, it's like, I don't know. It's hard to justify, right?
Mm-hmm.
So.
But I cannot justify. The amount of things I could spend.
Oh, yeah.
$500. I could get myself like two paddles. A new life jacket, some little pieces of gear for that $500.
Do I spend the $1,800 on a first-class plane ticket to fly out west, or do I spend $600 on economy class, and then I can maybe buy a new piece of gear, which I'm going to have to do?
Right.
Right? I don't know. It's just...
Those debates rage and rage and rage in my brain, and I can't see me ever owning a $500 to $700 paddle.
Yeah, me neither.
So, Bending Branches has this new Lamlock edge protection. And that's the big thing is people are buying these lightweight paddles. Yeah. And as you say, I'm not buying a $500 paddle and then crack.
Yeah, exactly. It's like, oh, I delaminated it.
So that half is 250. Mm. This half that's floating down the river I can't catch is 250.
Yeah.
Right? So they got this new Lamlock edge protection, and it's changing the landscape of composite canoe and kayak paddles. Ability to defend against delamination, impact, and abrasion will give you confidence in your paddle's durability season after season. They spent a large part of 2023 exploring and refining better edged protection for their composite paddles made with fiberglass and carbon. Their reasons had to do with the whitewater kayaking community and its disappointment with paddles already on the market. Based on their conversations with some of the top whitewater paddlers in the world, their highest priority was durability. Exactly.
Yeah. Well, yeah, do you want to buy a very expensive paddle and you have to buy another one in 5 years because it's too delicate?
Or you use it once, the blade cracks in half.
It's not pretty anymore, or yada, yada, yada.
It hadn't been uncommon for high-end whitewater paddles to start delaminating and chipping after just one season.
Mm.
Bending Branches engineers went to work to come up with better, more innovative solution. After several months of exploring and testing, they came up with a process of stitching feet upon feet of aramid thread around the edges of the paddles.
Oh, wait, stitching?
Aramid is the same material used in Kevlar canoes, bulletproof vests, aircraft panels, and other high-tech applications that demand lightweight, strong materials. They called it Lamlock. Locking the lamination of the blade layers together. Based on extensive testing in their Wisconsin factory, blades with Lamlock edge protection last a solid 5 times longer than blades without it.
Oh, there you go.
Means high-end paddles will last 5 years instead of 1. 10 years instead of 2, based on how tough each paddler is on their paddle. And that's a significant difference.
That could make a big difference when you're seeing how many years you get out of the money invested in a tool like that.
I have two paddles that I use regularly. One's the broken paddle.
Yep.
With a big chip out of it. Yep. My favorite paddle, actually. I use that on shallower waterbeds and stuff. If I'm getting into a portage, I pull that one.
You don't mind whacking it off rocks.
I don't mind whacking it off rocks. Animals, beaver dams, logs, fellow paddlers, whatever.
It sits on the beach uncovered in the rain.
My other one's my good one. That's for deep lake travel.
Yes.
Right? That one's nice. That one cost me a bit more. But yeah, I don't want something that's going to last 1 year at that kind of price.
Yeah.
But if this is going to last 10 years, potentially, that's a bit different.
True.
The aramid layer stitching locks the layers of the blade materials together very close to the edges and prevents the layers from delaminating. That, in turn, prevents water from getting in between those layers, making the paddle ineffective. It also provides a stopping point for chipping and rubbing when the blades meet rocks, gravel, and other abrasives. Especially if you're a whitewater kayak paddler yep. or something, right? You're constantly whacking those paddles on rocks. Bending Branches applied Lamlock to entirely new line of whitewater kayaking paddles through their sister company Aquabound in 2024. Testers and customers loved it. 2025, they introduced it on brand new kayak touring paddle for Aquabound, then on new designs with a couple of our dependable sellers. Moving into 2026, Lamlock has come to Bending Branches. On the canoe side, they have developed a brand new composite paddle for 2026 called the Horizon. This paddle pairs a carbon shaft with shatter-resistant grip and a fiberglass paddle blade. The blade's design is modern take on a traditional canoe paddle look, quite dramatic, but in a subtle way. Lamlock is applied to the lower edges of the blade for that 5 times extra durability. Because that's what's going to be hitting the most, right?
Yeah,
The end of the blade. It'll become a standard feature on many of the new composite paddles they create. On the kayak fishing side, they are now applying Lamlock to two of the Angler Pro models starting in 2026. The Angler Pro Carbon and the Angler Pro in the new Bruiser design.
The Bruiser.
As Bending Branches continues to develop new designs for their composite Angler Pro paddles, Lamlock will become standard there too. In the meantime, they'll continue to craft their current designs, Copperhead and Radiant, without Lamlock. So if you're going to get one of those paddles this year, you might want to wait a year. Which means slight price break if that extra durability isn't as important to you. Bending Branches' mission is to inspire meaningful outdoor experiences by offering premium products worth bragging about. Having an innovative mindset plays a vital role in carrying out that mission. Meaningful outdoor experience to you could mean a family day at the cabin or a 600-mile wilderness canoe trip. It could mean fishing with your kids for an afternoon or going from tournament to tournament around the country. Bending Branch is excited about Lamlock because it adds to your confidence in their products. Your kayak or your canoe paddle blade wearing out is one less thing on your mind while you're out enjoying the water in ways that are important to you. Bendingbranches.com, you can find all their paddles and stuff, and you'll see which ones they have that have the Lamlock on it. So the two they mentioned for canoeing is the Horizon paddle. Built for backcountry durability with light composites and Lamlock edge protection to go the distance on rugged expedition routes. Now, part of this is mental. Being it is lightweight means that lightweight is going to break easier than something heavy duty, right?
That's how you're led to think.
Yeah. So that's why you're thinking, oh, well, why am I going to buy this lightweight thing? It's just going to snap in half, right? But with the materials, and that's full on a mental thing you got to get over.
Yep.
This Horizon paddle has Lamlock patent pending edge protection, resists delamination, impact, and abrasion. Carbon blade peg adds strength and smooth feel. Hooked and shatter resistant T grip for control and comfort. Rugged enough for expedition abuse. Light enough for quick water. Designed specifically for class 1 to 3 whitewater and expeditionary trips. It's got a funky look to it, too. Shaft material, 100% carbon. Blade material, compression molded fiberglass with aramid. The blade is 8.125 by 19.25 inches. Grip material is plastic. Grip type, hook T grip. 23 ounces or 652 grams. If you go to their website, you can buy it for $350 US, or one of our Canadian retailers has it for $470 Canadian.
That's a lot. But I think what it does, well, I would definitely want to find somebody who has one of these paddles.
Let somebody else buy it. And
yeah, hey, buy the paddle. I want to see how it works out. Yeah. Talk to me in 2 years.
Right? So, Derek, do you need a new paddle? Buy this one. Let me know. The other one is the Angler Pro Carbon VersaLock Lamlock Kayak Paddle. It's got the lam lock, protecting the blade edges and dramatically extends the life of the paddle. 100% carbon shaft and compression molded blades deliver a smooth, high efficient stroke. High-tech spread toe weave increases the strength, stiffness, and impact resistance while reducing weight. Ideal for anglers going long distances or prioritizing weight. 102.5 square inch blade is the ideal size for horsepower and control with a heavily loaded fishing kayak. It's slightly bigger than some fishing paddles, but the larger size means it can handle trickier conditions and more weight. Shaft is ovalized where the hands go for more comfort and control and to limit their chance of blisters. Ooh.
Yeah, nice.
Here's a selling point. VersaLog offers 1.5 centimeters of additional length and infinite feathering options. Does so with an easy to use and understand system that is secure, robust, and resistant to corrosion. 100% carbon. Compression molded carbon with aramid blade. And 27 ounces or 765 grams.
Ooh.
So that's for a...
It's very light.
That's for a kayak paddle, fishing kayak paddle, right?
Mm-hmm.
$530 US from their bendingbranches.com website. $530. Or you can go to that Canadian retailer I was talking about. $710 Canadian.
Hmm.
I can't spend.
No.
Now... If you are buying a regular $100 paddle,
yep,
for $710,
seven paddles,
I can buy seven paddles.
I guess it really depends on how you're going to use it.
Yeah.
So maybe you're a gear junkie and you're really into, you know, hey, I got to have the biggest and best thing. It's going to be worth it for you. Or maybe you're like, hey, you know what? I'm gonna circle North America in a kayak, so I want one of these ultralight and carbon fiber bladed paddles. So mm-hmm. it makes sense to invest in it because it's going to be a very long trip. But I think the average Joe is—they're
not going to go for a $500 paddle.
No, 500 US. Yeah,
I would. Well, even with this, the Horizon paddle,
yeah.
$500 after, I mean, $470 plus taxes and stuff, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And if you order it, you got shipping and stuff on top of that. So $500 paddle, even that I'm hard-pressed to throw my money at. I mean, there's people that will. More power to them. Absolutely. Because that's what they...
Yeah.
But, you know, I've done canoe trips a few hundred kilometers. Mm-hmm. And I was keep going with my wood paddle.
Your chipped wooden paddle.
My chipped wooden paddle. There's my savings in weight right there.
That big chunk out of the bottom that's missing.
There's my savings.
So much
right
lighter
there.
Now.
Yeah, do you guys feel? I'm going to cut a paddle in a hole in all my paddles now. But yeah, you know what? As much as I'd say, if I won $1 million, I'd buy one.
Oh, absolutely.
Right.
Get money to burn.
But. I'd be hard-pressed otherwise to go buy one. Bendingbranches.com. Go to check them out and their new paddles and stuff. Like I say, they got pretty cool paddles. If Bending Branches were to say, hey, we'll try this one, I wouldn't say no.
Mm-hmm.
But
yep.
Each unto their own.
Absolutely.
You know, I mean, it took me how many years to finally break down and buy a dry suit just so I could extend my paddle.
Oh, yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Like, and even then it was a spur of the moment. Hey, here's a bonus check. Hey, I can afford it. And I just, without hesitation.
I've been waiting for this opportunity.
I just had that opportunity. I could have used that for other things, but I didn't. What are you going to do? But if you are into all that lightweight stuff.
Yeah.
And I don't know why. I'm just going to start rambling now. I don't know what the big deal with the fishing kayaks having to be so lightweight. It's not like you're portaging a fishing kayak.
No. And you're strapping and tying so many things to it. It's like my current canoe, my Holy Cow canoe, it's 42 pounds. It's going to be a little bit more now after the repairs. And I think to myself, well, I'm glad I have a light canoe because now I can, when I do a portages, I can bungee cord the paddles in. I can strap my life jacket to one of the seats. Mm-hmm. I can keep my tackle box strapped to the front seat. And so I'm like still, you know, 55, 60 pounds because I've attached gear. Plus I keep the water bottle still attached to the canoe for the portage. So it's a good thing I have a light canoe because I can add 20 pounds to it and still carry it.
Yeah. How come your 40 pound canoe is 90 pounds.
I strap a lot of stuff to the canoe just because I don't want to make two trips. So I try and, you know, first thing I do is when I get the gear out, I bungee cord all the paddles to the seats and the yoke and so on. Mm-hmm. Right. So.
Well, also depends on how long the portage is. If it's a short portage, I'm making two trips.
I'm just dragging it.
I'm just carrying that canoe and coming back for the rest. But no, my paddles, I'll tie in. My life jacket I put around the seat or off of one of the thwarts and hang it there. My water bottle I never do because it just swings back and forth. But then, but then I'll put my orange safety kit off the back.
Oh yeah,
it just goes whack, 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 whack. It just drives you nuts. It's like really, like all these years, haven't done anything to fix that. I probably strap a good 10 to 15 pounds worth of stuff inside.
It's a good thing I have a lightweight canoe.
We may be pretty, but no one said we had to be smart.
Well, now with my SP3 canoe, that's
nothing's getting strapped in that.
95 pounds.
Yeah.
And I'm going to strap paddles. And it's like, oh, I guess maybe not.
Nope. 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 Nopety. Nope or nope.
I need an anti-gravity sled.
Yeah.
Come on, Star Trek people, invent an anti-gravity sled.
Right? Like, everybody will be out there with the heavier canoes.
Oh, yeah.
The canoe industry will totally start losing money on the lightweight canoes. Because I just got a couple of these little anti-grav things I stick under each end, and the canoe just floats behind me.
I just bought myself a concrete canoe.
Right?
And it doesn't matter.
Don't matter. I don't got to care. I just got to pull it. Pulls nicely.
Yeah.
Lining canoes is going to be so much easier.
Yeah. Exactly.
Stand at the end of the rafts. I'm just going to push this down.
It'll hover above the white water.
It'll just hover above. That'll be awesome. Just put all your gear in it and just tow it around like a dog following you.
Yes, exactly.
Take my canoe for a walk. Thank you very much. Come on, scientist-y people. Get a little Star Trek action going here.
Make it happen.
I tell you. I think that's...
We have no shows to talk about at the end of the episode now.
No. Everything's done except for the lock and paddles that are coming up later in the summer. Oh, yes.
Lock and paddles coming up in July, August.
Yeah. Other than that, I think that's pretty much it now. Keep an eye on your local stuff, though, because there's always like little races and events going on.
Absolutely. So. And if you discover something that you want other people to know about, reach out to us. Say, hey, talk about this. There's this. We have our own log and paddle down in New York State, or we have this.
There's the one in the Erie Canal.
There is, and that's why I mentioned that one.
Yeah.
So there's lots of people have something local to them, and whether it's Germany, Japan, Switzerland, whatever, let us know, and... because we know we do have some listeners in those areas. We see the traffic.
Mm-hmm.
So reach out. Tell us what's going on near you so we can talk about it.
And I'm still contemplating a trip within a couple years. No. Oh!
I know. It's crazy.
Oh, you had to. I was just trying to wrap this up, and you had to start, didn't you? Everest.
Yes.
How many people do you think are in line waiting to go to Everest?
They're saying that this is the biggest year yet.
Yeah, but you're thinking maybe about 500 people, right?
Hmm.
3,000.
Well, now that includes people that are going to stay at base camp. So base camp right now is overloaded. But they're talking like this is the biggest numbers. If you include just the people, there's, I think they said 700. But then once you add all the porters and so on that are going to go up with you, because these people can't do it on their own. What is it? They're saying that they're now, may institute a, you need to do a 7,000 foot peak before you can be eligible. It's like, you know, you have to do, before you can do the Boston Marathon, you have to have raced in several other local marathons at certain, oh, certain times. Boston Marathon is very, it's too popular for its own good.
Hoity-toity.
And so they're trying to keep the numbers down. And same thing with Everest. There's too many people going up there, so they need to find a way to cut the number. But,
yeah, I just saw that number the other day, and I'm thinking, it's like, what? No, that's got to be a typo. No.
Think about the human waste that's being left on those mountains.
The garbage, well, the bodies even. And with everything, they're showing a whole bunch of stuff lately. There's been this one, I don't know how it just showed up in my feed, but bodies.
Oh, there's always been bodies.
Thawing out bodies everywhere lately. And it's just like, wow. Like, they need to close Everest. Just close it for like a decade.
Yeah.
And like, get the interest off of that.
Just like Crater Lake. Close Crater Lake until 2029. Well, close Everest until 2029.
Yeah. Do it. There's way too many people. Mm-hmm. And then there's that big, big ice thing size of a skyscraper fell. Or is about to fall. So they can't get past it.
Oh, on Everest.
On Everest.
So, yeah, there's always that, I can't remember, the Khumbu Icefall area. And there's a couple other areas that there's always, it's there's a glacier, so there's always chunks falling off. Yeah, but
there's a massive chunk that's about to fall, and the Sherpas are trying to find a way around it, and they have, and that's delaying everybody getting up.
Yes.
So, close it.
Yeah,
close it down.
I think one of the
one
of the routes is closed this year. I can't remember from Tibet side. Anyways,
yeah. Anyway, you had to bring that up. You had to say something. You just extended the show by 5 minutes.
We follow the same stuff. I see all the same stuff.
I know.
It's not paddling, but we did. We did.
But
there,
it is.
There was those two guys that did portage up to base camp.
Yeah. Yeah. Anyway, other than that, you got anything else?
No, I don't.
You sure?
Yes.
All right. Well, if you want to find out more about us, you can find us at paddlingadventuresradio.com. We're on Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube. You can stream or download all our episodes on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, iHeartRadio, Player FM, Podbean, Amazon Music, and all your favorite podcast downloading sites. Or just go to the episode page at paddlingadventuresradio.com, and you can stream or download all our episodes there. Our newest episodes are always on the front page of the website.
Yeah.
If you enjoy the podcast, please share it with friends, family, and fellow paddlers. I want to thank everybody for listening this week. I'm Sean Rowley.
And I'm Derek Specht. We'll see you next time.